Hey, Dad, what do you do when you're out with friends, the waiter comes up and tries to take everybody's order, but the whole table freezes up and everyone's looking at each other trying to find some help?
That's a great question. So what should I do?
You should have some confidence, Dad, or as our friends at Jägermeister call it, shotfidence. If everyone's having trouble ordering, here's what you do. You take charge, you grab the bull by the horns, you find that dog in you, and you make an executive decision and just order for the table a round of ice-cold Jägermeister shots. Damn, that's cold. Because apparently, we've all been drinking Jägermeister wrong.
Did not know that. How should we be drinking it?
Glad you asked, Dad. We should be drinking it ice cold at 0 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, that brings up other things that I love ice cold as well. And I'll tell you right out of the gate, that's going to be a candy bar pulled out of the freezer. That's my way of eating candy.
Oh, I love it. On the golf course out there, you get to the turn in the middle of the round there, and you get to that little clubhouse there, and they've always got the candy bar options, and I always see they've usually got a little box of them in the freezer, and it always makes it better on a hot day out on the golf course, taking a bite of that cold, cold chocolate and getting ready to go for the rest of my round. It's the same way with Jägermeister. So wherever you are, if you're hanging out with friends at the bar, call the shots. Cheers with ice-cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold.
And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York.
Lots of things go better together. Hockey, food, golf, peanut butter and jelly, Gojo and Golic, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. What? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Welcome back to Gojo and Golic. Mike Golic Jr., Mike Golic Sr., and with the draft now just hours away, it's time for one last round of bold predictions and analysis. To help us out with that, we bring in our friend, ESPN NFL analyst and host of the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny podcast. Mina Kimes with us here now. How you doing, bud?
As well as anyone can be doing ahead of the most exciting. I think this is the most exciting night of the year. I really do.
Are you still excited? Because I know the draft season is long and it is full of takes. You've been doing an incredible series of mock drafts with so many great analysts in the lead up here. So that hasn't diminished any of the excitement for you.
No, if anything, it's increased it because I've really tried to get guests on that series on YouTube with like really divergent opinions. So on one hand, you know, you had a lot of folks kind of going with the consensus of Caleb first, then it's probably going to be Daniels, then May in the draft. We'll see. But I had Chris Sims, who was really low on Drake May. Nate Tice, who was really high on him. In fact, he's his favorite quarterback. I had Paul Feinbaum, who was absolute chaos. So it's been fun to see how everybody feels about these quarterbacks.
All right, so let's jump in there because Good. Do we learn from history at all? And the history doesn't go back too far. We're predicting 5 quarterbacks in this first round. All the way back, Mina, in 2021, just years and years ago, we had 5 quarterbacks taken. To this day, 4 are no longer with their original team. Only one, Trevor Lawrence, is with his team. Does the NFL learn anything, or is the continued reach for a quarterback going to continue forever?
Well, I hear you, but I just did a pod with Bill Barnwell revisiting the 2018 draft, which had Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. And so the promise of finding one of those guys is what makes you keep swinging. The hit rate is lower than some other positions. I think it's probably, with 2021 factored in lower, it's lower than a lot of positions like wide receiver, for example. It's harder to find your answer at quarterback. But because if you do find him, it's so valuable, completely changes the course of history for your team, your franchise. You got to keep trying. I think the lesson to be learned is not don't draft a quarterback, but rather to look at the failures of those teams in evaluating certain quarterbacks, which we can talk about, and then putting them in the right situations, hiring the right coaches, that sort of things. And that's what makes a team like New England so fascinating, right? Because Many people, myself included, don't view that as a good situation for a quarterback, which raises questions about whether they would be smart to trade down and improve the offense around them. I hear that. However, saying that, you don't know when they're going to get another shot at a guy like, you know, the top three. So it makes it very difficult.
Ultimately, Mina, how many quarterbacks do you think end up going in this first round outside of those top three?
I think four. I am not really buying the expectation that Penix or Nix go in the first round. I do think McCarthy goes in the first round, but and I'm a Washington Huskies fan. I love Michael Penix. He's responsible for the greatest college football season of my lifetime. But I do think that the concerns about his health and then the age and some reasonable dings on accuracy over the course of the season will put off certain teams. He's been linked a lot with the Raiders. I do not see him going at 13. We'll see if I'm wrong. So the question then will be whether or not they're incentivized to trade up in the draft to go get him. They don't have a lot of draft capital to do so, though.
So I that's my thought, Mina. I actually think he could end up being the best quarterback out of this draft, but you do have to cross your fingers because of the injuries. I completely understand that. What about the possibility of not going up to get him, but going back deeper and later in the first round to get him? I know you'll lose out on getting somebody at that spot, but still get your quarterback while picking up some assets.
That I think actually makes more sense for the Raiders because of their draft picks. I think the question is kind of just how far you'd have to go, because you're not really competing with any teams at the end, but it would be a question of whether Denver, which also, you know, Denver doesn't have a second round pick, whether or not they have the flexibility or interest in moving around the board. And then the Rams are another team that doesn't really make sense to me, but they've been linked with Penix as well. That doesn't make sense because my feeling about Michael Penix is if you draft him, he should play immediately. You know, he is not the kind of quarterback you sit for years into, in part because of his age. Yeah. He's 24. I'm like, this Social Security, you know, just around the corner from Michael Penix. I mean, that's the draft, right? But I think it's going to be, it's a lot of chicken with who are you actually competing with. How much would you have to give up? What would you gain in moving back? But I do think that would make sense for Las Vegas.
Mina, we've talked in this draft cycle so much about the quarterbacks, and really I think a lot of, you know, the prime position players, whether it's a wide receiver or offensive line, everyone's kind of become well acquainted with a lot of the names that have been up top for a while. Is there a prospect that you've seen as the biggest riser in this draft cycle, someone whose stock, maybe outside of the quarterbacks, has risen the most in the months since we finished college football season?
Ooh, that is a really good question. I just had Matt Miller on my pod, and he said something that I've been hearing from a few people, which is that teams really love Byron Murphy Jr., the defensive tackle out of Texas. And Matt said he could be the first defensive player, which stunned me because I think everybody's been assuming, myself included, for a while that Atlanta is likely to stick at eight and take Dallas Turner or trade down. And then a team would come up and get a receiver, probably Roma Dunze. But that's a player where, like, I get it. Like, you know, when I watch him, I feel like his tape is just so easy to translate to the NFL. It's so easy to imagine him slotting into a team with the 4-3 that needs a truly disruptive 3-tech. I mean, it's funny because Atlanta's assumed to take an edge rusher, but right. He does remind you of Grady Jarrett, who's on their team when you watch him. And I think for a good reason. It's a lofty comparison, no doubt, but I do see a lot of Jarrett in not just his size profile, but the way he uses his hands, how quick he is at the line of scrimmage, his athleticism. So that's a player I wouldn't be surprised if he goes pretty early.
All right, I'm going to really qualify this question, Mina.
Oh,
take out the quarterbacks,
okay,
and take out Marvin Harrison Jr. 3 years from now, which player do you think will have the most impact in the league?
I think Roma Dunze is going to be a star. All year I was saying, actually, maybe you could call him a riser too, because I felt some way about him watching him at UW. And then it was kind of interesting to see everybody, like people like Daniel Jeremiah, who thinks he's the best receiver in the draft, sort of echo how I felt. So what I said about him all year in college is I could not, watching him get his game, And I, to be honest, you could say this about Harrison Jr. too, but just talking about Odunze, I can't imagine a world in which he's not good in the NFL. Like, you know, no prospect is bust proof. You know, there's the history is littered with examples of guys who everybody thought were sure things. But when you watch him, he is so good at all of the things it takes to play receiver at the highest level. The little things, the little nuances in his releases, how he sets up defenders, the way he uses his hands after the catch. I think he's underrated. He has the athleticism, the production, the size. He has everything, the mental makeup from all accounts. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal character guy. I would be stunned if he is not good.
Yeah, that seems to be blue chip stock that you have the chance to buy there. And he's one, as you go through the draft process, I always think it's interesting, Mina, we're all trying to project guys to the next level. Like you said, the things that seem easy to replicate on the NFL level that are familiar based off what we've seen be successful there. And then there's also the people that you just flat out like watching. Rome Odunze, for me, was one of those guys. Very aesthetically pleasing game. I've talked about Talisi Fuaga at Oregon State being one of my favorite guys. Do you have someone whose tape has been like a breath of fresh air for you? Like when you turn this on, you're actually just legitimately excited to watch this player.
I mean, Laiatu Latu's tape is like snuff film, if you like, pass rushing. I mean, it's ridiculous, guys. What he did to the Pac-12 should be illegal in 50 states. Like, it is, I mean, good God, Arizona, USC. Oh. Like, I've said this before, but I actually wasn't intending to watch him. I start with the quarterbacks right after the Super Bowl. I put on USC. I'm watching Caleb Williams. I'm liking it. I get to UCLA, and I had to hit pause and just text everybody I knew who likes pass rushers, and I was just like, have you guys like watched this Latu? I mean, I watched him, you know, watching in real time, but oh my God, on tape, he's unreal. I think he is about as polished as a pass rushing prospect as we've seen in recent years. And he's just, you know, so many of the pass rushers taken over the last few years, this isn't new, are projections. You think of a guy like, you know, Trayvon Walker with Jacksonville, where the production's not quite there in college. I think Anderson Jr. is different, where the production really matched the athleticism. But there's been a lot of guys who are just like athletes, and it's like, they'll figure it out. They'll develop, you know, a second move and account when they get to the NFL. And then you turn on Latu's tape, and it's already there. It's unbelievable. It's so fun to just pause, watch, see, like, and we'll see where he goes. I think that's one of the bigger question marks in the first round, whether or not the medicals and maybe some size questions about arm length and whatever put some teams off of him. But I feel like if he goes below 15, some team is going to get a real steal.
So last year, Houston Texans had a first-time head coach, first-time play caller, first-time quarterback, first round also, first-time defensive end, edge rusher. Because, and they go to the playoffs and win a game. Because of that, is there going to be unwarranted pressure, undue pressure on first-year head coaches of bad teams put on by their owners saying, see, they did it, why can't we?
I don't think there should be pressure on first-year head coaches. I think there should be pressures on guys like Adam Peters at Washington, the first year GM, because you see, you know, the Houston Texans nailed it in terms of their evaluation of CJ Stroud. So you've got, you know, three teams in the top three this year taking quarterbacks, most likely, and potentially the Minnesota Vikings as well. You know, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah to me is under one of the GMs under a ton of pressure. But all of these guys, you see what CJ Stroud did in Texas, and I think all of them are under immense pressure to find the next CJ Stroud. But that to me is more about the front office than the coaching staffs.
It's interesting to consider some of those elements of the draft and the lead up. I think of, you know, the pressure on a team like Chicago in that way, with everything they've got, the way that roster is coming together. And then you sprinkle in Caleb Williams, who everyone expects to go number one, who, Mina, the conversation about him and his personality, the way he conducts and carries himself in the lead up to this draft, has been fascinating for what seems to be, in all actuality, our first like true Gen Z quarterback. How much do you factor that into the way you think about him going to the next level and just really what we've got coming down the pipeline, a generation of player that so it appears to be different, especially at these leadership positions that a lot of the NFL is used to?
Yeah, I saw our friend Pablo Torre had a podcast with Dave Fleming, used to be a coworker of mine, And I think Fleming was talking about how decision makers or GMs or people in, you know, NFL circles express some apprehension about what you're talking about, which is his personality. First, I want to say, there's no doubt in my mind that this is true because I've been around these guys. I've heard these people talk. This is how a lot of these guys in the NFL still think. So, you know, it's a real thing. I don't agree with it, obviously, but it's a real, not obviously, I guess, but it's a real thing. I think what's interesting about Caleb is, like, to me, the fact that it's not more of a story just speaks to how damn good he is at football. Because if he was not the unquestioned number one pick, if he was in the May Daniels debate, I think it would be something that's brought up a little bit more. Like, imagine if Caleb Williams was at the infamous, now infamous Topgolf outing. There would be questions. How did he interact with everyone, you know, right? Like, what, is he a leader? Is he an alpha? I look at the interview that he did with another friend of ours, Ryan Clark, at the Pivot, and the quotes coming out were just great because it was just pure quarterback. He thinks he's the best. He wants to be Tom Brady. He wants to win. That's what matters, guys. It doesn't matter that, you know, he paints his nails or that he shows emotion. What matters is that he's a killer who thinks he's the best. And clearly both of those things are true.
No, what matters is, according to Kevin Costner in Draft Day, did anybody show up to his birthday party?
Yes.
That's what
did
everybody...
Did you pull out driver at Topgolf? Yeah. And how many people came to your birthday party?
That's what you want to know. So Mina, we know he's going to be number one. Who of the names we've been saying over and over and over ad nauseum since the end of the season will the camera be on in the green room as we wait and go, oh, they didn't get picked there. Who's going to take them? And we're waiting for a while. Is there one or two players you think of that may fall into that category?
I wouldn't be surprised if one of the top three edge rushers takes a little bit of a fall. Speaking of Dallas Turner, Latu, who I mentioned, and Jared Verse. Just because as I've done all of these mock drafts, it's actually kind of hard at times to find places for them because so many of the teams you think might go defense in that first 25 or so also could use an offensive tackle. A team like the Rams comes to mind. Like, everybody assumes, okay, well, the Rams, you know, defense, no doubt. You lose Aaron Donald and pick 19, you get Murphy Jr., potentially Johnny Newton, one of the three edge rushers. But guys, I'm telling you, Sean McVay's probably going to go offense, right? He's his first round draft pick ever. And I think there's a lot of teams like that. I think like the Colts, everybody thinks needs a cornerback, but they're probably going to go with the receiver or a tight end if Brock Bowers is somewhere that maybe they won't, but I'm just saying there's so many points in the draft where you'd think a team might go defense, and I wouldn't be surprised if they go offense. And if that happens, I wouldn't be surprised if one of those edge rushers or maybe one of those top two or three corners is still there at the end.
All right, so if that's the player or position that might be one of the biggest headlines coming out of this, what about team, Mina? When we turn the page on night one of the draft, what team do you think has the biggest chance to make the move that we're all talking about Friday morning?
Well, I think Minnesota is the one that I think I would be stunned if they don't make an aggressive move to go get the quarterback, most likely McCarthy, because I do think probably the Patriots stick and take Drake May. The question to me is going to be, okay, if not Minnesota, will Denver or Vegas be aggressive? And then the other one I would keep an eye on is Buffalo potentially trading up for a receiver. I don't know if they'd be willing to part with what it would take to go get Odunze, as I've been advocating for, but they jump out to me as a potential Brian Thomas Jr. destination as well. Don't know if they love him, but it's just such a glaring need, a glaring example of need aligning with some of the players who are available. And then, of course, they should be trying to win now with Josh Allen.
It is one of the most wonderful times of the year. Mina's got me fired up now, frothing at the mouth. So, Mina, happy draft weekend. Thank you so much, my friend. Enjoy it, and we'll talk to you again soon as we start giving out grades on the other side.
See you guys.
Thanks, Mina.
Mina Kimes can truly do it all, but I don't think we should allow her to do this giveaway pool because she would just win instantly. So you out there, you should enter this because we're giving $1,000 away in bonus bets at DraftKings. If you're not already, follow this account, Gojo and Golic. Enter the Gojo and Golic draft pick'em pool. Answer a bunch of questions about the draft, and if you win, you get $1,000 in bonus bets. Not too bad.
Hey, listen, free time there, free to play, and $1,000 in bonus bets here that are up for grabs for you there. So who wouldn't want to pass up on that? You're right. We shouldn't let Mina play, but at the very least, listening to her, probably a good idea.
One of the smartest moves ESPN did was re-upping her. Let me tell you,
yeah.
You don't want to lose. I'll still never forget. The draft was in Nashville, right? When you, Jason Fitz, her, and I don't, it might have been somebody else
It was me, Jason Fitz, who's got a great draft show over at Yahoo he's doing today, Field Yates, Dominique Foxworth. Yeah. We had a stacked cast.
All your guys' reaction, I remember when Daniel Jones got picked by. That was the draft, right?
Yes, Daniel it was. Jones Thanks for bringing that back up again. So all Giants fans of mine mentioned it.
At the end of the day, while he got paid, we still really don't think that he's the quarterback of the future.
And again, I will say, the reaction was that the Giants and Dave Gettleman decided to do that at 6 where no one else thought they would or should have at that point and could have gotten him later in the draft. Not anything against Daniel Jones, but just Dave Gettleman's continued defiance of everyone in the lead up to that.
But
because those are the moments that end up defining draft nights, Dad, when one person believes that they know better than everybody
else. That's exactly right. And I equate that, and I keep remembering when Ryan Tannehill got picked at number 7 by the Dolphins, and we were all like, what? And that's when, again, I talked to Ron Jaworski, former quarterback in the NFL, in this business forever. He said, if the team likes a guy and think it's the franchise guy, no matter what, you take him, whether you take him in your spot, whether you trade up to take him, because that's the most important position. So that's what you do. And if that's what Gettleman thought, he's the guy running the show. We've seen right moves, wrong moves on all teams, but if that's the guy you think, then that's the guy you take.
It's also why he doesn't have a job anymore.
Well, that's true, too.
So, I mean, it's just one of those things that, like, you can think it's the guy all you want. Yeah. And listen, all respect to the people that get in those positions, but, again, you're judged on that, so you bet. Yep. The other thing is, you better be damn sure.
Yep.
That's what this comes down
to. That's the thing. You can never be damn sure.
All right, guys, let's talk about Jägermeister. They could have written a totally normal ad here, like a really classic ad. They could have talked about their history, the 56 botanicals. It could have been all salesy and cutesy, but they know you don't care. Jägermeister doesn't want to be like all those other ads you've seen and heard. They just wanted to say two things. Jägermeister is great, but everyone has been drinking it wrong. Damn, that's cold.
Drinking it wrong? All right, if that's the case, how should we be drinking it?
They are so glad you asked, and so am I, Dad. I'm here to help you. Ice cold is the answer, at 0 degrees Fahrenheit to be exact. Ice cold shots of Jägermeister. That's it. That's all they want to tell you. So, wherever you are, if you're hanging out with friends or at the bar, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjägermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister Liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York.
Continue our division breakdown of the biggest needs for tonight's NFL draft. And in the AFC North, the Bengals got requests for trades ahead of tonight's draft from two of their current stars. Pro Bowl edge rusher Trey Hendrickson reportedly requested a trade Wednesday per Adam Schefter. He's looking for a more long-term security despite reworking his deal less than a year ago. And then wide receiver T. Higgins, who received the franchise tag from the team, also requested a trade in March. Bengals pick at 18. Gojo, how do they approach this draft? And what do you think about these two trade requests so soon after they already worked out deals?
Not surprising for historically one of the cheapest franchises in sports. I mean, this is not I just saw a podcast appearance that Andrew Whitworth did, former Bengals offensive tackle that wound up finishing his career and winning a Super Bowl with the Los Angeles Rams. And he talked about how difficult it was when you feel like you've outplayed your contract at that organization to try and get them to pony up for that long-term extension. He mentioned one year, I think in 2015, when he tried to go back to the table with them, they ended up drafting an offensive tackle in the first and the second round here. This Bengals team drafted Miles Murphy out of Clemson last year in the first round, and I saw some mocks had them potentially looking at edge rusher again, which would send a pretty clear message to a guy that outside of T.J. Watt last year, Dad, was the most productive sacker of the quarterback in the NFL with 17 and a half.
They have gotten better. Let's give Cincinnati credit. They have gotten better over the years because I remember back in the days
of ESPN. Got better at what?
At better at paying and treating their players better.
I feel like they got better because they lucked into Joe Burrow, who forced them to actually behave like adults.
As I did an interview years ago with Takeo Spikes when he was with the Bengals, and he talked about how it was difficult to get a regular-sized towel for showering.
They used to have to walk across the street to the University of Cincinnati's indoor. So like, that was a poverty franchise.
It's gotten a little better. They've got some talent, obviously, with Burrow and obviously Ja'Marr Chase, who they picked up the fifth-year option on. That was a no-brainer. But they're going to have to pay a lot of people. Hendrickson wanted – him and his agent wanted a long-term deal. Didn't happen. It was a year extension they got. So still hoping to get a long-term deal from Cincinnati. T. Higgins is on the franchise tag, which if they don't get a new deal done, I'm sure he'll play on this year. But they definitely have some people to pay.
They have a lot of people to pay. It seems like Hendrickson might be the odd man out in this one, despite a guy who, ever since he came there, has outplayed his expectations, been one of the most productive rushers in the NFL. And that's the volume stats, that's the deep metric stuff, pass rush win rate, all these different things that you can measure to show this guy's been incredibly effective for Lou Anarumo's defense.
Yeah, he has. But all that said, they're probably going to go on the offensive side, right? Losing Jonah Williams, the offensive tackle.
Sure.
Because Burrow has now been hurt a couple of times.
And listen, they went out there and they acquired Trent Brown this offseason. You already had Orlando there as well. So I think what you've got is an offensive line that on the bookends, two of the biggest guys in the sport trying to protect Joe Burrow. But going at offensive line, J.C. Latham doesn't seem like it's going to be down there anymore, but that could be Amarius Mims main. If Talisi Fuaga, a guy who could kick inside and be an interior guy for you, drops down that far, I think that would be insane value for them. But, yeah, the charge for this team is pretty simple. You could say defensive back might need some help, but I think if you're the Bengals, you got lucky. Like I said, you hit the jackpot. Joe Burrow was one of those rare quarterbacks that gets drafted and actually can lift a franchise, actually can survive being sacked 70-plus times in a season with the wide receiver crew you ended up there. Seems like you're going to be able to keep the band together for one more year. I think they're going to strong-arm T. Higgins on that franchise tag unless he's really willing to play hardball.
Yeah, I don't think he is. I think he's going to play on.
And so now it's, hey, you got to get this offensive line, which they tried to do, right? They tried to do what the Chiefs did in hockey line change the group in front last year, but now you've really got to push all your chips to the center of the table.
Yep, I would agree with that. Then you look at Pittsburgh. They have the 20th overall pick. You know, is it they lose Deontay?
By the way, Orlando Brown, just because I couldn't finish out his last name before. We had him on the show at the Super Bowl. Great
they,
guy.
They lose Deontay Johnson. Well, we know with the wide receivers, they have some personality issues as well.
Well, I mean, Deontay Johnson was a big part of that. You know, the fumble incident earlier in the year where it looked like a lack of effort showing up on tape. We heard, I mean, there was a players-only meeting through all this. We talked with Cam Hayward about some of that discomfort there. And so now you're trying to kind of remake that. You're trying to kind of turn the page on this offense by swapping out the quarterbacks, the changing coordinator you made last year. So
you have two quarterbacks now on one-year deals, right? For the Steelers, Russell Wilson on that one-year deal for league minimum because Denver's paying everything. And they did not pick up who they picked up, Justin Fields, but they did not pick up his fifth-year option. So both quarterbacks, 1 and 2, are on a one-year deal. So we'll see what goes on with that. But you got to believe that I got to go O-line here, Mike, even if it's interior O-line, that they're going to have to shore up that offense.
Yeah, they released their starting center from last year, let him go there. The one I've seen mock now, I just did a hit with the Pittsburgh Station this morning, Graham Barton out of Duke. Been a big riser in this class, a ton of versatility along the interior. Played left tackle for the last few years at Duke, and listen, in a pinch I think could help you out there, but I think his best days between the power that he displays, some of the things he did in the run game out of a two-point stance, his lower body, how flexible he is, how strong his core is, I think this guy's got a super bright future. One of my favorite guys to watch in this draft class, what he did on the edge against some really powerful rushers in the ACC last year, I think bodes well for his transition to the inside. Him at 20, I've seen mocked a lot of places, so that seems like it could be somewhat of a foregone conclusion there as they continue to try and rebuild that offense in front of those quarterbacks there. Dad, now we start to get into the, you know, surplus category. The Baltimore Ravens picking at 30th overall. This is a team that stunned a lot of people by not making it further in the AFC playoffs last year with the way they were. Historically great track in the regular season. What do you see as a big need for Baltimore coming off last year?
They pick up one O-lineman and Josh Jones. They pick up Derrick Henry, which was huge. But they lost three O-linemen.
Yes.
So, and I love the way their defense plays. I mean, Kyle Hamilton is turning into an absolute star on that defense. But I like the way their defense is playing. So this is another reason why earlier when we were talking with Claudia giving us the odds, it was 9.5 offensive linemen. O-line and why we both said over, I think we're going to see O-line again here.
Yeah, I would agree. Defensively, you had the brain drain certainly on the defensive coaching staff, but you kept the majority of your great pieces there. Matt Ebike, Roquan Smith, and Kyle, like you mentioned, in the secondary. That spine of the defense really healthy. I think you can overcome that. And offensively, it's interesting because they rotated tackles a lot last year. And so you had Patrick McCary, who got a ton of reps there, rotating in with Ronnie Stanley. Daniel Falele on the other side was going back and forth with Morgan Moses.
Monster
so
player.
Not totally inexperienced in that group, but we've seen Ronnie Stanley's dealt with a lot of injury over the last couple of years. Part of that rotation has been out of need there. So Jordan Morgan, who came on with us, I think would be a real fascinating fit. First off, just the size there. Daniel Falele was a mountain of a man. But Morgan, incredibly fluid athlete for his size. And I think in that scheme in Baltimore that's been really multiple, Todd Monken's a guy who likes to get guys out on the move. And that's something that when we talked to Jordan, he said, hey, I focused a lot more on getting out there in space, being a puller, working on screens. All that stuff would fit really well in that Baltimore
also
offense.
A guy, though, that could kick down because they lost two guards in free agency.
I think in a pinch, like I still think because of what an athlete is, some of the spots he gets
outside,
in trouble, he gets going a little bit too much. So I'd be curious about that transition to the inside, but I don't think it's totally outside of his skill set. So Baltimore there, shoring that up, because again, these are garnishes on a team we expect to keep going off what their path was last year. The Cleveland Browns, a little more interesting, Dad. Their first pick doesn't come until the second round. So much of this team is, hey, you just need to make sure you do whatever it takes to get Deshaun Watson back in the driver's seat. So who do you like here for them?
Well, they also get Jameis Winston. Remember, they went through four quarterbacks last year, the last one being Flacco. He's gone now. And I think the backup is important because, let's be honest, you can't count on Deshaun Watson being out there. I mean, he hasn't proven that, A, with suspension, we know what he went through, and then with injury. So you better be damn well set at the backup position, and now that's Jameis Winston's job out there. You know, Amari Cooper had himself a year. Njoku, the tight end, really kind of flourished as well. These guys, again, with four quarterbacks to be able to do that. They picked up Deontay Foreman. They should get Nick Chubb back, but we'll see. I mean, he had a nasty knee injury, so others may have to pick up the slack until he can get back. Probably more help on the outside at wide receiver. I would imagine at that point, one of the deeper, probably the deepest position in this draft.
Yeah, I've seen some places like if Keon Coleman gets down in this range, really impressive athlete. I know the time he ran gave people a little bit of pause. But the other thing I'd say is, like, especially if a couple of good guys bleed down further and maybe you trade back into the back end of the first round, O-line depth, like, I know you draft DeJuan Jones early on last year, but you had three tackles go down with knee injuries over the course of last season. O-line had been a strength. You lose Bill Callahan, the offensive line coach, going over with his son to Tennessee. So that position all of a sudden feels a little bit tenuous, and it's going to be huge for Deshaun Watson's success.
Every team in the AFC North has changed one coordinator. Baltimore, they changed defensive coordinator. The other three changed offensive coordinator. So, yeah, some transition there as well.
Coming up next, we'll take a look at more change, rumors, and whispers ahead of the 2024 NFL Draft with Diana Rossini here on Gojo and Golic. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament all the way through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. So whether you're bought in on Heat culture at this point or think the Boston Celtics can survive a bump in the road, we got options for you. Just download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code GOJO. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code GOJO only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. That's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, we're fired up for this one. It is draft day, and that means we need to tap in with one of our favorite friends and NFL insiders. You can check her out over at The Athletic.
or potentially in an Orange Theory class in the New Jersey area. Diana Rossini joins us now, fresh off getting it splatted up this morning. One of the most competitive people I know has found a new outlet now. So, Diana, is this how you want to start your draft day?
Yeah, watch out, moms of New Jersey. Here I come. It's truly sad what my life has evolved into. As if my career isn't competitive enough, I feel like I have to add to it. So I started Orange Theory, and I am an addict, guys. And it's really just, I think, the joy I get of being able to go there and beat out people. And most of the people in my class are a lot older. But for me, I don't care. It gives me something to do and feel like I've accomplished. And really on a day like today where, gosh, I'm really anxious, which I have no idea why. I'm not Kevin O'Connell. I'm not Sean Payton. But I just felt like that was just a good way to kind of start the day knowing that this is going to be a really fun few hours, knowing that no one has any answers right now and everyone is looking for information. And it's funny because, as you guys know, you can't bring your phone in Orange Theory. They're pretty strict about it. But I went up to the coach today and said, hey, I really need my phone today. I have a family medical emergency.
Oh, wow.
I'm on call. Such a lie. Totally just did that because I just didn't have the energy, truthfully, to go, I'm a football reporter and today's the draft. And, you know, if I can get a text from the Giants and they tell me they you know, were able to get this trade to move up, then, you know. So long story short, you know, the workout was good, despite the fact that I had to tell a little fib to keep the phone, which the phone was lighting up. But most of it was just people stressed out going, what are you hearing? What do you know? Let us in.
So what I've learned from this is if I go into my Orange Theory class, which I had done yesterday, and I see Diana there, I am grabbing my hammy and I am leaving
because
I don't want to be showing up by her. So I want to ask about, we always talk about draft time as the lying season, and you have a bunch of notes out there and thoughts out there and information that you get. Is this one of the more difficult times for you to actually get the info you're getting and believe it? Because of some of the lying that may be going on?
It's a great question because it is the biggest challenge I have this time of year. I wrote a column yesterday that I worked on for a while. It's a pretty basic title. It's what I'm hearing. And what I do is I just try to take as much information that I've learned over the last few days leading into today. Because really, guys, the serious focus on who these teams are going to start taking starts over the weekend, last weekend. So it's funny, I was playing with the idea of like, you know, should I start writing last week? And I said, you know, it's just going to be a bunch of crap anyway. Let me wait till we get closer to the draft. So yesterday I published essentially what I'm hearing, and it's going to hold up through today because it's pretty much the same stuff, which, you know, we'll get into in a minute, but, you know, I really lean on the people that I've known the longest, where the relationship now is so past just throwing me one little scoop on a transaction of a player they're signing or a trade that they're planning. Some of the real core inner circle, the people that I have these relationships with over the years, they're my people. And I have these conversations where they'll say, look, we really want Drake May. Don't report that. But, you know, you can share, this is the kind of work that we did in terms of the quarterbacks. Here's what we did behind the scenes. So a lot of the people I trust will tell me what they're actually doing. I just won't say it or report it. As for the others that are lying to me, you guys have known me a long time now. I don't really hold back on saying, I know you're lying to me. So, which I truthfully, personally, I am working on that because I don't think people want to be called liars, right? So I was on the phone 2 days ago with someone in New England and I started to laugh when they were telling me something. And I said, look, I probably bought this line in 2013, 14 when I started and I was just a little hungry bunny looking to take any scoop I could get. But I'm old now, buddy, and I know how this works. So why don't we just cut it out and talk real? And he completely changed. He's like, all right. And so it was really, the dynamic was really funny because he's like, I called him out on it. Like, we're not doing this anymore. I'm not doing the BS talk. So yeah, it is hard, but I call it out.
So you've called it out now. We've got all these lines in the water. What personally are you most curious about then going into tonight based on the things that you've been hearing in the lead up?
I have so many, but I woke up feeling, and I have actually woken up the last few days feeling this way, anxious for the Minnesota Vikings. Mm. And there's layers to it. One, just the fact that they let Kirk Cousins walk. And there were people in that building that we know of, right? They've been pretty public about it, who wanted to sign Kirk. Ownership in the end realized that that contract is not something that they wanted to sign up for. A 35-year-old coming off an Achilles, you know, they want to start fresh. They have so much confidence in Kevin O'Connell as a head coach. And it was on display last year of what he's able to get out of his quarterbacks. But the fact that they let Kirk walk and now they need to find the guy. This player needs to essentially be a superhero. And I'm anxious for the team. I'm anxious for the player they pick because they're carrying the weight of the world of the Vikings on them, knowing that this team is completely focused on getting a quarterback in this draft. Okay, so that's part of it. The other part of it where my anxiety is coming from them is they may get boxed out. They may not even get the guy that they want. So not only will they miss out, not only is there potential of them missing out on their first choice, they may miss out on their second choice. So after all of this, could you imagine if the night ends and the Vikings get perhaps the fourth, fifth best quarterback on the board? To me, that's not going to be good enough. And it's going to put a lot of pressure on their GM and their head coach and this coaching staff to really find a way to get the most out of them. So for me, the Vikings are the one I'm like, ooh, this thing's got to get going here because we need to figure out what the answer is going to be for them.
Of some of your draft buzz, the thing that intrigued me because I felt and I know you crossed your fingers on his health with Michael Penix Jr. I think he could end up being the best quarterback of this draft. We'll wait and see. But you said that stock is rising. I've heard that a little bit. When you say rising, how much do we think rising?
So, okay, so let's go back to the first question you asked me today about the lying, right? I had a GM that I'm really close to and I trust. He was not even in the quarterback game. And he said to me, I'm just going to put this on your radar. You have to do your own work on it, though. I said, okay. He said, Penix. I said, what about it? He said, he's the name you're not hearing for a reason. So that told me that he probably has another GM buddy or coach. So who is on the quarterback market, right? And is probably sharing information. So I spent Monday, Tuesday digging on it. And I came across a few teams, two teams specifically, actually, who came across Penix, not because they hadn't seen him, right? So it's obviously everyone has seen him on the field. They saw him playing last year. It's just the work a lot of these teams are doing are on Washington's offensive line and their wide receivers. So the offensive coordinators and even the quarterback coaches and just people on the offensive staff are watching tape of Washington. And they're like, wait, we're here to watch the linemen, but man, this quarterback is good. We should probably tell our head coach about this. We should probably just speak up. So teams have been sort of, Penix has almost been like a byproduct because teams are doing so much work on those other positions. They're like, wait, I think Penix needs to get looked at a little bit more. So when we talk about his stock rising, I think it's a little bit because he's become an afterthought, but now teams are in on it. Okay, so that's one side to it. And the other side is his stock may have been up the whole time and we just didn't know. And we're just talking about the top prospects right. Left and right and left and right, but Penix may be up there. So this could be the year where we go, man, we messed up. We should have been talking about him earlier.
The one that was there all along, yeah. Sitting right in front of you.
There.
Like the girl in the rom-com with the glasses and her hair up. Yeah. All he had to do was take it off, put the hair down, and ready to go. Diana Rossini,
ready to go. She was right there, Mike.
Diana, you've been right there all along for us. We love you, buddy. Thank you so much. Enjoy draft night. We're fired up to watch it alongside you and see how the hell this all shakes out.
It's going to be awesome, guys. Thanks for having me. Love you both.
Thanks, Diana. Appreciate it. She's a great spokesman for Orange Theory. You work out, you have that kind of energy.
Look at that. Start your day the right way on draft night. We'll finish our day with Emerson Lazzia next.
Oh, no.
All All right, time to finish off the show the way we always do. This, that, and the third. Three quick stories to end the day. As always, download, subscribe, rate, review us. Leave us a five-star rating. Check us out here live Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern. Noon to 1 p.m. Eastern, wherever you hear VSiN on the radio. Follow us at Gojo and Golic on Twitter tonight. Also going to do plenty of draft reaction live alongside the 2024 NFL Draft's first round. Really looking forward to that one. And if you missed any of this great draft preview, you got all day to listen to it. Go and check it out wherever you get your podcast. Our great guests like Joe Alt, who we expect to hear his name called in the top 10 of the draft tonight. ESPN's Mina Kimes, kind enough to join us, as she's going to be out in Detroit with that crew getting ready to go. And Diana Russini, NFL insider over at The Athletic, got us fired up to finish off the day here.
She's feeling really ready to go there.
So all great stuff. You can listen to it all day wherever you get your pods or right here on YouTube as soon as we get done with the show. Speaking of balls of energy, though.
Getting fired up.
Wow. There are very few who bring as much zest to life as our buddy here, Emerson Latia. You can obviously see him on this show sometimes, on The Sweat, on the weekends around here at DraftKings. But for my money, pound for pound, the best man on the street, man, that there is in the game right now. And so with Caleb Williams set to become the number one overall pick in the draft tonight, there's been a lot of conversation about his style, the nail painting, all these different things. So we sent Emerson out in the streets here in Boston to try and get a read on how people felt about this heading into the draft. Take a listen.
Hello, hello. Oh, don't you look away. I need a woman's opinion on this.
Okay. Since you're Canadian, this is a perfect question for you.
Am I going to be on YouTube?
Hell yeah, brother.
So Caleb Williams, he paints his nails. Is that a red flag or a green flag?
I don't care.
Not a flag at all.
That's what I'm saying.
He's an open-minded person, he's loving and caring.
Green flag, who cares?
Amen, brother. I like you, man.
You know what? Most people today have actually been pretty cool about it. They're
yes,
like, just
be
gone.
Yourself.
What do you think about an NFL player painting his nails? Would you want a quarterback who paints his nails? Red flag or green flag that he paints his nails?
Yeah, no, not in Boston, we don't.
No comment.
No comment? Okay, I'll take
that. You know
that.
What that is.
From my parents, man.
Do you paint your nails a lot?
No, that was a long time ago.
I've never painted my nails before. Would you be able to help me? Let's go.
Will someone here help me paint another nail on my
Can
finger?
I? Yes.
Please, please.
Would you want to paint one of my nails?
Sure, let's do it, man.
Oh, my God. One finger down, Billy. Do you want to try and paint one of my nails?
No.
Would you be willing to paint one of my nails for me?
I don't know.
What is the key of, like, getting this right?
You're not moving, so stop.
Oh, my God. I feel like Thanos right now. I think you know what you're doing. That was my sixth one, and that was the absolute best. Look at this.
There we go.
No.
Yeah!
Actually, could you finish me off and do my last one for me here? I've got all nine of them done now. Mark it 10, baby. I'm not gonna lie. I love the smell. Oh, yeah.
Emerson huffing nail polish fumes at the end of this.
It's everything I ever wanted out of that segment. So I'm glad.
His nails look great.
Yeah, the one lady told him to stop moving. We just stop moving.
Emerson does need people to keep him in line
really
does. So that woman was a breath of fresh air. Yeah. Thank you to all those people. And it's a good reminder. It's nice to see people keeping an open mind about this stuff.
Yeah.
2024, we should care about this stuff. You want to throw out a little bit of style in your game?
Who cares?
Right ahead, especially if you can ball.
And I love how the woman's just like, that means he's loving and he's caring. And there you go, Caleb Williams. Yeah, you're giving the people what they want.
Not sure if I get that from painting your nails, but the bottom line is, who cares?
Exactly.
Who cares?
Let it ride. And you know what? You know who's really not going to care? Chicago Bears fans soon when he's tossing touchdowns on their very improved team this upcoming fall. That was this. Claudia, speaking of the Bears, let's get to that. We love a good stadium rendering around here, and Chicago has provided us with even more.
Yes, so fans will be happy to hopefully get him, and then also possibly a new dome. $5 billion proposal, enclosed stadium next to the current Soldier Field. They're asking for public funding, so they need a little help here.
Are. Yeah.
$3.2 billion for the new stadium, plus an additional $1.5 billion in infrastructure. What do we think about this?
Well, listen, I love open air. I loved playing in the cold. I love the home field advantage of that when you get to bad weather, especially if and when the Bears get back to the playoffs. But this is going to be a dome, and I get it. I get it because you want to use it for more than just 8 football games, right? You want to be able to use it year-round, Final Fours, which obviously it can be very cold out. It can be when that happens, depending on the spring. So I do think it's a good idea for total use of that place.
Yeah, I mean, this is what modern stadium building's been about, which is being able to use these things year-round. Everyone looked at Jerry Jones making money hand over fist in Dallas with Jerry World and decided to replicate it. And it's also these teams, especially in cold weather environments, want their shot of hosting a Super Bowl or any number of these other events that become increasingly more likely with a domed stadium here. Takes away, I know for a lot of people, snow football, winter football is nostalgia. The outdoor nature's a part of it. I've been a little less married to that than most, but Dad, this is kind of the way that things are going right now. The public funding thing is lame. Like, pay for your own stadium, grow up, Peter Pan.
That, unfortunately, is never going to end, though. There are some, like I know in Phoenix, before the Coyotes left, they were going to build a new stadium there. That was all going to be privately funded. They weren't looking for money from the fans there at all. So that's something that's a way for a team to hold a city hostage a bit or try and work something out.
Well, remember, we had this back and forth with whether they're going to go to Arlington Heights, potentially north of the city, that plot of land. And so I know amongst fans in Chicago, it's interesting, too, talking about, you know, all politics are local. The way that this stadium had always been received, because there's not a lot of tailgating around there. It's a little bit hard to get to.
It is.
I do hope in all of this there's an opportunity to create a better game day experience for fans around that so they can be around that area. Maybe it's a little bit more walkable. Maybe there's an area for people to tailgate and enjoy themselves there. But
as far,
we'll see.
As far as playing, I liked playing in the cold. I would take 20 degrees over 90 degrees any day of the week. Give me that. I'll play in the snow. I'll play in ice because, again, the athletic ability of everybody else comes down to me then. So I did not mind playing in cold or snow or anything like that.
Yeah, I know this is like the anti-O-lineman thing for me to say, but I was never really as invested into it. My idea of football weather is like 65 degrees and sunny.
Right.
I think it always seems like a shame in the NFL. You spend all these brain power, all these man hours putting together these meticulously crafted game plans.
Then they go out the window.
And then it's all of a sudden you go out there. And the game's going to be decided by some botched punt and whoever's able to run it back in a foot of snow. It feels sort of silly. But again, there's great, you know, as a viewer, it's awesome. The visuals are incredible. It obviously makes for really compelling action when you get to see everybody's breath and the steam rising.
But overall, you completely understand why you do a dome. There's so much more revenue that's out there to be had when you have a dome and can do it year-round.
We know this isn't about sports. This is always about money.
About money.
At the bottom line of all of this. All right, let's get to the third here. We have walked across a wilderness of mock drafts, of insiders, of people doing, and you know what, shout out to everybody during draft season that does a lot of the hard work, people that have given us insight in the lead up to this. It's a year-round process for a lot of these people, but we are now finally here on draft night. We've talked about it. It's awesome from the player's perspective because you do get to watch all of the emotion wrapped up into tonight, the storytelling to learn how these people got here with their families, what they've sacrificed, and now, yes, earn the opportunity for to start at the bottom of the totem pole again and to have to work your way back up. But, man, what an accomplishment to get here. You are rewarded handsomely with millions of dollars and can change your family's life. But such a cool moment there. So excited for all the guys that we've gotten to talk to who are getting ready to hear their name called. That being said, this is also our last chance for some bold predictions for tonight. So, Dad, Claudia, anything that you guys really want to get off your chest that you think we've been waiting to see, we've been talking about in the lead-up, and you think comes to fruition tonight?
I'm tempted to go the 1-2-3 quarterback, which would be the first time in NFL draft history that we see that. However, JJ McCarthy at number 4 plus 380 is enticing. So that would be my bold little beer money sprinkle, if anything.
Here's mine. The record player for most players selected in a single draft whose father made at least one Pro Bowl is 4. You have a bunch tonight.
Yeah.
You have the possibility. I think that record gets broken. You have 1, 2, 3, 4.
Did Joe's dad make a Pro Bowl?
Joe Alt is in here as his dad, John. There's 8. There's more than 8 total, but there's 8 fathers who made at least one Pro Bowl whose kid possibly may be drafted. So that record gets broken tonight. It's 4 whose father played and has at least one Pro Bowl. I think that record will be broken tonight with players like Joe Alt and others out there already.
Wow. All right. Fathers and sons. I was just going to say Byron Murphy was going to be the first defensive player taken in this draft, and now I feel like I've really let everyone down.
I'll throw in 6 quarterbacks in the first round.
6. I still say I agree with Mina Kimes where I think we get 4 before we get 6 in the first round, but we just heard from Diana also. Maybe Michael Penix Jr. is the name nobody's talking about. We get to stop wondering, and we just get to start seeing. Thank you to everybody for tuning in. Enjoy the draft tonight. Thanks so much. We'll get ready for the best sound in sports and be back to break it all down with grades tomorrow.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.